In these turbulent financial times, securing your investments with gold and silver needs to be done today, before the next crash. Go to republicmonetary.com for our free information kit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
We're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from Phoenix, I'm sorry, Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com Studios. Now, we are relatively concerned. We have a lot of things to be concerned about. And we'll get to Carlos here in a little bit because I wanted to, talk to him about the volume of bankruptcies and the kind of stories that you're getting from people. I mean, that as time we've been around, there's the boom and bust stuff. I'm old enough. I've seen it go up and down and up and down and up and down before. And I tell you, people have stories that tell you where we're really at. They'll say, well, this happened, and this is why, and it was this circumstance, and it was always government. Government did it. Government, in my opinion. Now, let's go ahead and go to this one case we're working on now, Jeff Smith, okay? Real fast, give me the highlights on this one, where we're going with that.
Oh, man, real fast. Well, Jeff came into my office, and the reason we can use his name on this case is because he came in and he wanted to be an activist from day one. I mean, here's a guy who's almost 60 years old, pot smoker for a long, long time, never any problems, successful life, long time manager, big company, done really well in life.
Retired, chilling.
Yeah, just hanging out. And he's with his buddy, and it's about midnight, and he's online in his home, in front of his computer with his buddy, and they're smoking some weed. And he's got this window open, and he's got a fan blowing the weed out the window. Now, if
dummy.
This was TV, we'd have...
Dummy.
Yeah, it's not the smartest thing he's ever done. But, of course, hound dog, highly trained, very sensitive, scent-of-smell police officer, stops whatever other important things he might be doing to get to the bottom of this major crime. So he walks through the neighborhood where my guy, Mr. Smith, lives, and he finds the offending window with the offending odor, and he goes up there and takes his flashlight out and raps on the window and says, "Get to the front door and open the front door right now."
Was he required to?
No. Nor would he again if it happened, now that we've had an opportunity. So again, this is where I normally go, does he A, does he B, does he C? But you know the answer, and since we're going fast, he does the wrong thing, and he opens the front door, and the officer asks him, this is the second difficult question coming up, "Have you been smoking marijuana?"
Dude!
And number two, he says, "Yes, I have." By the way, the officer says, "Step out of the house," where the cuffs are slapped on him. You're under arrest. Then the officer says, "We are now going back into your house to search your home for more marijuana." The officer then opens the front door, walks into Mr. Smith's home, and starts rummaging through Jeff's items in his study, where he finds a small amount of green.
Is he allowed
substance.
To do that, or he gave him permission?
Well,
or
that's gonna be some of the argument. Look, he's allowed to do anything he wants if you give him permission. And of course, the facts aren't clear.
Well, can't you put he was incapacitated? He was stoned. he wasn't able to properly represent himself or something.
Probably not going to go over very nicely in the superior court. But in any event, of course, the officer says, "Yes, Mr. Smith invited me into his home to search for more marijuana." Mr. Smith says, "Hell no, the hell I did. I was outside in handcuffs. I wasn't very accommodating. Come on in, have tea and crumpets and look for some marijuana." But in any event, marijuana found. And so this officer decides that what the proper thing to do with Mr. Smith at this point is to haul his you-know-what down to the police station, where he books him into the jail, fingerprints, photographs. Eventually, he's cut loose. hours later into the night now, and he says, by the way, you'll be hearing from me. Well, a year and a half later, Mr. Smith gets a little love note from the county attorney, Andrew Thomas, saying you are now hereby charged with two, not one, but two felonies, possession of marijuana.
A year and a half later.
A year and a half later. Because they get to it when they get to it. If they get to it, you know, it's, look, a 60-year-old guy in his home smoking a joint is not the top of the urgency list.
Well, it is when your, you know, revenue is down.
So he gets charged. He comes into my office and I say, look, you know, you can resolve this pretty easily. You don't need me. He says, no. He says, I want to make a big stink out of it. So I call up the press. The press comes down. We videotape the entire, recreate the incident at his home. We walk through it. And that story is getting ready to air soon in Phoenix.
And then we'll start. We'll take that and do a chip in, help him. And I go to Jeff. I said, look, you know, you got to have some skin in this game. I mean, I'm not the one that got caught. You know, you want us to help with this. You know what we got? He goes, well, I got this old boat that I got. It's mine now. So he gives it. So he gets some skin in this game. He gives you this like 19-foot speedboat. It's a nice boat. You know, it's old. It's probably 25 years old. But, you know, it was worked on and it's in good condition. So we took and put it over at Barry's house. And this winter, we're going to be, because it's orange, so it goes good with our Freedom's Phoenix logo. So we're going to call it the Phoenix on the back, put some wings on the bow, and we're going to raffle it off. And that's going to be the fundraiser for this case. And we said, we're going to, Freedom's Phoenix, we're going to walk it through, man. Because, I mean, if you're just sitting, because we're going, what's the hook on this? I mean, did they stomp on his cat? Did they kick his kid? I mean, you know, what's the thing? Well, I'll tell you what the hook is. He wasn't bothering anybody.
Leave him alone.
He's
leave
sitting
him alone.
In his house. Here's an adult. He's 60 years old. He's like, just leave me alone. And late at night, they got nothing better than to do. I'm smelling an arrest. It's so important that they're charging him 18 months later. So I'm just going, all right, well, you know, here we go. Here we go.
It's just the bottom line. It's just un-American. It's just un-American.
They got better things to do, you know. Anyway, so then we go to another one. Well, there's a lot of things. What is this one? You already did that. Oh, and this is the one we want to do. Baseline killer. Here in Arizona. I mean, I'll tell you the bottom line. We've already started on this. It's just getting going. There was a serial murderer that was going around killing people. He's raping, pillaging, murdering. It was terrible. But the city of Phoenix wanted to get credit for this. They were amping this up. Heck, this is for more funding. See, we need more. We got the attention and all that. It was just a PR thing for them. Well, what happened was there were detectives. They were the heroes in this. They're screaming, you know, we got evidence from one of the early crimes that we need tested, and they wouldn't send it down the street to the state police, the DPS, Department of Public Service, to because they wanted to do it in their new little lab. They didn't have the equipment or the software for some stupid thing like that. 6, 7, 8 more people get killed because they wouldn't check it. It was a PR thing to them. They didn't care. It finally gets the unions involved. You know, the police unions like, are you sure you guys want to play this game? It goes back and forth. Finally, they find out that they could have had the guy. They had his DNA on file. He was a predator from before. He was on probation. They knew who he was. And all of a sudden, within a week, they test. Fine, go test it. Boom, caught him. Done. And all these people died for no reason other than they're just scumbag government, blah, blah, blah. So we have some of the families who are like, man, you know, what the heck? So, Mark, two families have joined the suit, isn't it?
And there might be a third coming on soon. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, the people might say that how in the world, Mark, can you argue that this is somehow connected to Jeff Smith's case that we just talked about? But I think they are. And here's why. Look, we're in Phoenix, okay? What are we, the 6th or 7th largest city in the United States, or maybe 8th? I don't know. But we're main players in a country that's the world's superpower. We ought to have the best technology. We ought to have the best crime labs. But instead, we're running around and we're devoting resources to chase down people like Jeff Smith when we should be putting resources into getting guys like Mark Goodeau, the guy who's now charged with all these various serial murders. So when DNA evidence is obtained from one of the very first crimes, a double rape, and it's run in the Phoenix crime lab and it comes back inconclusive because the Phoenix crime lab doesn't have the ability to run this new, more modern Y-Star DNA testing, but DPS does. And so the information we have right now is Phoenix, rather than send this over to DPS and get it tested with the Y-Star, makes a conscious, intentional decision to just say, look, we want to solve this thing at our crime lab without involving DPS. So instead of testing it at DPS, they just stick it in an evidence locker where it sits for 8 months. And during that period of time, murders start piling up, bodies pile up, and the detectives...
And they love the attention.
Yeah, the detectives...
They're reveling in it.
Right, the detectives who are working on this case and want to solve it are in essence pounding the table, saying, look, send the stuff over to DPS and test it. And at least one officer has told me directly to my face that what he was told is, no, we want to solve this the old-fashioned way. We want to solve it here. Well, eventually... the clamor of test it gets loud enough where they send it over to DPS. DPS runs the more advanced Y-Star DNA testing, immediately hitting on Mark Goudeau. They go out, they pick the guy up, and now the families are upset, understandably, and so am I.
This is, if you're going to have a government that's going to claim they're going to do all this stuff for you, and they spend all their time on green leafy substances, what are you going to think?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
That song sounds familiar. Who is that? Is this more Boston? That must be for Mr. Mark J. Victor. You know, here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and we have like a division of labor thing going on. You know, I take care of certain things, Mark takes care of certain things, and a lot of things get taken care of. I mean, you know, we have other guys that we work with, and this has been going on for at least 15 years or more. I mean, this why is it always Arizona? Because there's always blowback. I'll tell you quite frankly what it was. It's just an injustice. You finally get this point where, you know, you can't just sit back and let them just keep doing this stuff without, because you know it's going to come back. It's going to make it more difficult for you, your children. Mark has three young children. I got grown children, start to get grandchildren. I'm like, you know, if we don't, because what's going to happen? It's going to get worse. I guarantee it. Now, what we're doing now, I want to finish up on the baseline thing. You have a third family now, because there's a lot of families that, you know, unnecessarily their loved ones are killed in gruesome ways. And it was all political. And sometimes you take an opportunity to just put a mirror up to the government and you say, look, because from my standpoint, it's like, you know, this vaccination thing. What is the proper role of government? I mean, they'll sit there and claim to protect me from aggression for somebody doing something to me. And I go, you know, if somebody's coming up and doing the Simon Legree, you know, hand-wringing thing around Halloween, I'm going to stick this. You know, you'd be a good Halloween character. You know, you'd be a doctor, you know, government doctor. He's going to stick a needle in you. So if they're going to do that and force that on you, I'm thinking that I would be able to go to the government and say, you know, look, this guy's going to... you know, force something into my body that's what they're there for until they're the ones doing it. Who do you go to? You know, what is the role of government if they're not there to protect me against someone sticking something inside my skin? Well, they make the claim that, you know, we're here. Well, you know, you got to have a government. I mean, us libertarians, you anarchists, you got to have a government to protect you against like serial murderers and rapists. Well, then when you have them, what do?
Well, you know, Ernie, you did hit the nail on the head. I mean, that is the question. What is the role of government? And, you know, people who are pro-freedom, you and I, what we say, if there is a role, and there is, the role is to just protect our rights. We have certain rights. And then, namely, the way you summarize it and have on many occasions, it's to be left alone. We have a right to be left alone. We have a right to defend ourselves when people aren't leaving us alone. And we can hire agents, call them the government, to protect us from being trespassed upon. Now, that's sort of what we say about the role of government. Then there are other people who have a different opinion about the role of government. Their statements would probably go something like, well, the role of government is to make sure everybody has a nice life, to make sure that people are taken care of and that people live their lives in ways that we find appropriate for them to live their ways, and to redistribute resources in ways that we think are appropriate, and to accomplish certain ends. And really, that's the philosophical battle. And there isn't a great, you know, you press a button and ding, 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 here's the answer. This is what the role of government. But whether people realize it or not, our country and really the world is in this philosophical battle over that question. What is the role
of
government?
But I'll tell you where it breaks down, because they have to count on the willing participation of the most productive to be redistributed to everybody else. And what happens is, if you're fewer and fewer productive people are counted on to give everybody else a minimum standard of living, they're like, why am I doing this? That's the Atlas Shrugged thing. You go, hey, man, I'm done. You know, what's the point? I'm done. Now who are you going to milk?
Well, I was just going to say Atlas Shrugged. The problem here is nobody's shrugging the Atlas. Although there is a brain drain, there's enough people right now who are continuing to allow the government to just bilk them out of 60-70% of their income.
Well, I tell you, you know, it's all coming to an end. I mean, you look at the stock market today, as if it matters. You know, it's down 250 points. Boom! And then you look at gold and silver's been taking a hit. Okay? It's going down. And we had a story earlier this week that said, you watch. Friday afternoon, it's going to start going. Sure enough, what happened to gold? Gold was as low as 1,020-something. Now it's back up to 1,044 in a day. And what happens is that a lot of these options and futures are coming due. You know, people say, hey, you know what? I want delivery. China's pulling the barge up. London's saying, you know, fill her up. We're going back to China.
How funny to hear you talk about gold being down to 1,020.
I know.
Down to 1,020.
You know, the one thing about silver is that, you know, it went down to 16 something. I just bought another 200 ounces of Freedom's Phoenix rounds, you know, that we have and so on. And I paid, you know, like a dollar more an ounce for them just a few days ago. And it went down. I'm like, dang it. You know, but then, you know, I look at it, I'm going, you know, doesn't matter, because a few months from now or within a year or two, we're going to be going, wow, do you remember when silver used to be in double digits? You know, it's coming. There's nothing you can do. It's all reflection on the dollar. And that's what Charles Goyette's book, The Dollar Meltdown, was about. He goes from the beginning. He's like, look, let me walk you through this. Just while we were, I was working with him on the air. We'd have Jim Rogers and Peter Schiff and Ron Paul and Bovard and Miss Shedlock and all these guys that were saying, screaming at the top of their lungs, this is coming to an end. Here is why it's called math. There is nothing to get that will get you away from the inevitability of us getting into the bankruptcy.
Well, you know, Ernie, this is going to be an interesting question to ask Ron Paul at the Freedom Summit, because I'd like to know what he thinks about this. I would like to know if Ron Paul really thought that had he been elected, he could have averted any of this.
Because, heck no.
Yeah, because he may very well say, you know what, it's too late, it's too far gone. Even if I had been elected president of the United States, it's still too
late
for me
to fix it. But we could have immediately started the recovery. You just get rid of the Federal Reserve. Let people let everything zero out. Let you know, this TARP stuff, not more in debt than us. You know, let it go to whatever. Let the banks fail. Let them, who cares? Too big to fail for who? I don't remember it having anything to do with me, you know, so I'm like, you know, what, are you kidding me? You know, let's start over. Well, if you just get this monkey off our back, we will explode in productivity. But, you know, we're going the other way, and Carlos Brown here is going, and you may make your contribution for me helping you with that. So, Carlos, go ahead and tell us, man. Give me some of the stories. What's the, you know, let's put it this way. You know, you're one guy. I mean, how many can one guy do? You know, how many bankruptcies are you working on?
I'm working on over 70 bankruptcies right
now.
Oh,
my goodness. Can you even do that?
Definitely. And not only that, but I see probably about 8 to 10 new people that come in and tell me, you know, exactly what's going on in their life and the trouble that they're having with paying their bills. And
8, 10 a day? 8, 10 a week? What?
Probably about 8 to 10 a week. At times, I can have as many as 6 people in one day. But that's just too many.
Well, give me some. Can I distill it down in what's their common story? I bought too big a house, and you know that's a big one.
Well, one thing I do want to say is that not too long ago, Alex Benezer, who's also an attorney at the firm, and I went to a continuing legal education class, and we were surprised to find out that in the state of Arizona in September there were 3,500 bankruptcies. So I kind of did the math on that, and it turned out that there were about 115 Chapter 7s and 115 Chapter 13s filed every day in the state of Arizona. which is absolutely amazing.
I mean, that's a lot. I don't know. I mean, that the little bitty bankruptcies, big giant bankruptcies, you know, a combination. I mean, you know, I don't know what's normal. What was it, you know, 10 years ago? I mean, I don't know.
I'm not exactly sure what it was 10 years ago, but I remember at some point in, I believe, July, I did the math, and it was under 100, and they had said at the time that bankruptcies were up 40% from 2008 at that time. So
okay, so people are coming in. They're going, hit me. I mean, you know, and what's their stories? Give me kind of a general, typical, this person comes in, they owe how much, you know, what were the reasons? Are they family? Are they single? They're young, they're old. You know, what's your typical person?
Typical person, I would say, is a couple that comes in and is about 6 to 8 months past due on their first mortgage. They also usually have a second, some credit cards. And most of the time, one of the two has lost their job and can't afford to pay. They cannot afford to pay all of the bills. And they come
when we
in
come back, I want to hear how the laws, you know, are there to help them, not because they have changed. And we need to know when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every afternoon here on Liberty News Radio. Now, I have in studio Mark J. Victor from attorneyforfreedom.com. We've been partners in crime. Well, at least the government would say so. But, you know, when you're opposing the man for violating your rights, you're not allowed to do that. There ought to be a law. Well, they got plenty of them. We challenge them all the time. Now, we have also Carlos Brown in here, works at Attorney for Freedom, and you do bankruptcies, and what we started getting into is, you know, people, they come in, and generally they're behind 8 months or so on their first mortgage. They're not going to get caught up. They can't. They're behind. They can't sell it. Nobody's buying their home anymore. They're in arrears. And if they renegotiate it, now all of a sudden, you know, it's a $300,000 home, and they say, all right, we'll make it $200,000. They got to pay, like, taxes on $100,000, don't they?
Yes, what usually happens is when people, if they allow their home to foreclose or, you know, do a deed in lieu of foreclosure, any loss that the bank receives, the person who owned the house will receive a 1099 for that loss, and they usually have to pay it in taxes unless they claim what's called a 125 exclusion in on their taxes.
What kind of exclusion is that? I can't afford it. Please don't make me.
Yes. If they've lived in the house for at least 6 months in the last 2 years, they're able to claim that exclusion. And I think there are certain other qualifications, like it has to be a purchase money mortgage that you took out to purchase the home. So if you've refinanced, it won't go towards that. So,
all right. So give me a typical thing. Somebody comes in, redo my stuff, and how often is it that they got to pay more in taxes on written off value that they're not going to pay back? Because a bankruptcy says, okay, you don't have to pay this, but you're going to get a tax bill.
In bankruptcy, they will not receive a tax bill. So because they can prove that they were insolvent and had to file bankruptcy, they then will not receive a 1099. Or if they do, they won't have to pay back through their taxes any loss that the bank received.
So what's the incentive not to do bankruptcy?
Right now, I don't think there is much. Another huge thing is on second mortgages. A lot of people at the height of the market took out second mortgages to pay off their cars, credit cards, or to do other things with them, like go on vacation or whatever. So in the state of Arizona, there's something called the anti-deficiency statute. So if your home is foreclosed, as long as, or you give it up, as long as the money that you borrowed to that you borrowed was used to purchase the home, then you do not have to, you cannot be sued by the lender for any loss that they received. But if that was not purchase money and you borrowed the money for any other reason, like it was a HELOC or something like that, and none of the money went back into the home, it's a home equity line of credit.
Yeah,
sorry about that.
Yeah, help us out here.
So what's happening is a lot of people that come in are people who have already gone through foreclosure and now have received something from a law firm saying, hey, we're going to sue you for this $100,000 that you borrowed that you never paid back that was now lost. So the only recourse that people have is to file bankruptcy.
Wow. So I am wondering, is the trend going to increase? Are you seeing more? Is there an end in sight? Are there new laws we need to worry about? What about the credit cards? Are they still owing? Because I remember them making a big deal out just like a year or two ago that they got legislation passed. They wanted to, big banks are like, oh, no, 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 no. You're going to owe us. You know why? Because we got congressmen that we pay to make sure you do. So, so tell me about that.
It definitely looks like that bankruptcies are trending upward. I mean, the increase is still being seen and realized. And I think that as people lose their homes and realize that they're in a situation where they are going to be 1099 or that they are going to be sued, their only recourse is to file. So I definitely think that bankruptcies are still definitely going
to
go up.
Tell me about the laws that they made some changes about the credit cards and so on. I remember hearing a bunch about that. Does that ring a bell with you?
It does only a little bit, but from the small amount that I heard, from my understanding, they were saying that credit card companies, after, I believe, February, are not going to be able to raise your interest rates arbitrarily. And the key thing that I remember that was so upsetting about it is they told them that they were going to do it in February. So, of course, all of the credit card companies are now raising everyone's rates. And I personally have even received something that stated that mine were going to go up, even though I've never been late or anything on them.
Oh, I know why. Because they can. You know, I want to get a sense also of how this has affected people personally. Because a lot of times, I'll give you an example. It was in the 80s. And I remember my best man at my wedding, a good friend from high school, and we were hanging and we were just starting to make money and opening businesses and we're having to do this, accountant thing and so on. He goes, yeah, I talked to my accountant. I can't believe how much paying in taxes. I'm going, yeah, this is crap, man. I'm not working in this. Who am I working for? I'm a slave for the man. And that was back then. Heck, it's a lot worse now. Lord forbid, have a freaking restaurant and tell me how bad it is. Except you get cash. That's better. That's another story. But anyway, what happens is that you sit there and you go, explain to me how it is that I can get around different stuff or what I can do and all this. And finally, the accountant went to my friend, and he was very exacerbated about it. And he said, this isn't going to get fixed until you can't take your boat to the lake. And we're like, the heck is he talking about? The point that he was making, he extrapolated on, he said, when people can't enjoy the work week at the weekend, you work, you get all this stuff, you get a recreation, you want to take, man, I made it. Thank God it's Friday. Boom, you go to the lake on the weekend. You got the fuel to do it. You paid all your little taxes and registrations and your little fee to park your thing. And you go, man, I'm on the lake. I'm chilling, Then you go, you take the Sunday off, you go to church, you don't, you sleep in, you watch football, or you start the week Monday, it's all good. When people can't get that rest, when they are slaves to the machine, when they start to realize there is no end, there is no break, there is nothing left for them to relax on, that's when you start seeing the revolution. That's when people start to fight. But that's when and that's what I'm kind of building up to. When these people come in and they're talking to you, are they like, we can't get a job. We work three jobs. We have all these bills. We were on this wheel that we just can't get off of. Or are they just like, screw it. I don't even care. I mean, what's their stress level? Where are they at? Are they ready to rebel?
The stress level is extremely high. I mean, I have a lot of situations where people come in and they're in my office crying. I mean, they do not want to file bankruptcy. And believe it or not, I think bankruptcy kind of has or used to have a negative connotation where people thought, people just don't want to pay or they want to get out of it. But literally 9 out of 10 clients that come in are people who are genuine, who really wanted to, pay their debts off. And their stress level is through the roof. They come in, they cry, they have homes that their children were born in, that they were raised in. They don't want to leave the neighborhood, and they're losing their homes. And at times, I try not to advise clients on exactly what they should do, but I try to give them, here's A, B, and C, take your pick. But sometimes they latch on to certain things that just can't be done. Like, if we file this bankruptcy, you still are not going to be able to afford this house. And I'm the one who has to break the news to them that says, have you thought about just letting it go? And, I mean, I've literally had people break down and cry in my office over it because they realize at that point that they can't afford it and that they will lose their home.
Wow. You know, and how does that manifest itself into a political kind of view? Are they mad at somebody? Is it the government, the bankers, the system, America? They're ripping up flags. I mean, you know, what are they doing?
They don't really, a lot of times they don't get into the political side of it, but they do in a way blame banks and say, you know, I can't believe the bank would let me into this loan. And I think it's a little bit of a two-way street because, you know, people were overstating income, banks weren't checking. But one thing that I really do realize is in order to file a bankruptcy, I have to tell someone, hey, bring in 6 months of your pay stubs. And it literally takes me 15 minutes to go through that to see exactly what their numbers are like to determine whether or not if they want to file a 13 and keep their home, you know, can they afford it? So I kind of think to myself, it would have been extremely easy for a bank to say to someone, hey, bring in your pay stubs so that we can see if you really make the money that you're claiming to make. Because I think one of the huge problems is that interest rates are adjusting and the arms are starting to mature or come to where people are having to pay principal and interest and they just cannot afford it. And it seemed to be a huge part that caused this kind of financial mess that most people find themselves in.
Well, you know, as part of what Charles's book was about, I mean, as we did shows and everything, it was very obvious what was going on. If you could fog a mirror, you could get a mortgage, and there was a reason for it, because they needed to have that so that we had another financial instrument that they could do this mortgage security thing and put it into whatever and amp it up into a whole bunch of money that they could make. And it was just a mechanism by which to enrich themselves and screw us again. Well, you know, the people went for it, but they were marketing it to them. Yeah, it's all good. Go ahead. Yeah, you can just sell it later. Don't worry about it. You know, so we're learning, but we need to learn it and not have government bail us out or the bad guys. We'll talk about more when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Got to do is just play the game. You know, just relax. It's all right. We got it covered for you. Don't worry about it. Let me step inside, play the game. And how do you get inoculated from the game? Unplug from the Matrix. And here we got unpluggers, you know, Carlos Brown and Mark J. Victor. And one thing, I did want to bring this back to Mark and say, you know, when you have people that are on the edge the way they are here, you know, I mean, in Arizona, probably as much or more than anywhere else. Because it was so much, you know, this speculative investment in real estate and everybody in their houses and ATM here more than most. And I'm telling you, it was bad. And in Vegas. Oh, we have Brock from Las Vegas. You know, I got you there, Brock.
Hey, Ernie. Hey, Mark. Hey, Carlos. How's it going?
Yeah, you know, it's one thing, Brock. You know, you're in real estate there. You know, tell us how it's going with y'all.
Hey, we're actually seeing upticks in prices right now. I've been told anecdotally by some real estate agents that they've never been busier than they have been in their lives. Homes are going on the market, and they'll have two or three offers in them within a couple hours.
Yeah, short sales. Donna's real estate, I know exactly what's going on. They were at $300,000. Now they're selling like hotcakes at $120,000.
Yep, exactly. Well, they're just right priced, you know. So, but we are seeing some upward pressure, but then I'm sitting here right now on my back porch next to two vacant houses that the bank's not doing anything with, and I'm the one doing the upkeep on them just to keep them from looking derelict.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff to still come on the market.
Well, tell me, you know, bankruptcies, I know we've had this conversation before. You're like, you know, pay your bills, dang it, you know? And what do you think is the reality? What's going to happen?
I think bankruptcy is the... Well, it's the mechanism that we have set up to take care of folks who can't pay bills. You know, I mean, it's if you make a commitment, I think you know, stand by that commitment until you can't, and then you got to make big changes. And if the big changes involve court order, then I guess that's what you have to do.
You know, one thing I want to stay on there. I want to ask Mark this. When you have this, because we went through this before here in Arizona, it was the savings and loan thing in the late 80s, early 90s, and so on. And you had, you know, things like crime. I mean, you know, people are desperate. People are looking for, you know, just survive. And then they're hanging on by a thread, and they can't afford to have all of a sudden Mr. Government Man pulling them over, and it's just a $200 ticket. It's just a $500 fine. It's just a little bit of charge or whatever. Get yourself an attorney. It's $4,000. It's just a little. I mean, you have people coming in that generally good people, and all of a sudden they got a bill that's going to send them over into bankruptcy. You know, I mean, have you experienced anything like that?
Well, I think, you know, part of the issue here right now is governments, and I, you know, this is a good thing, but governments are struggling too. And, you know, the initial part of that is, of course, we love the concept. Anything that chokes off the beast is a good thing. And so governments are getting less revenues into their coffers. But, you know, their reaction to that, you know, government operates differently than private businesses, which have to convince people to come in and use their business. Government just forces more money out of your pocket. And so, you know, Ernie, drive from the east side of town to the west side of town across the I-10, and you're probably going to get, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 photo radar cameras. In fact, I drove out to California recently, and do you know, out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by nothingness, there's video radar cameras.
I saw it coming in on the west side of Phoenix out there on the highway.
Now, this is for our protection, right?
I was like, are you kidding me?
There is nothing anywhere. You've got...
No, there is. There's money to be made.
Right. And so that's the flip side is, you know, governments are wrenching down on people. And, you know, for example, fines in criminal cases continue to go up and up and up.
Yeah, what's this? They go, we have you have an 80% surcharge on your fine. I'm like, whoa.
Well, it's higher than that now. I think it's 84%.
What does that even mean? If I got a fine, I got a fine. Now I got a surcharge on my fine?
You get a fine, which, by the way, look. The good thing about Arizona, and you should know this, I don't know if Brock knows this, but just in case you ever come to Arizona, this is a good thing. This is for your protection, too. The absolute max, there's a cap on the amount of fine you can get here in Arizona. So, like, for example, when you get popped for possession of marijuana, that one joint that you have that now you're charged with a felony, you can absolutely, positively, under no circumstances, be charged more than $150,000 of a fine for that. Plus, and you know that, I'm just going to tell you that fine has not gone up since I've been practicing law for 15 years, and that's it. But, of course, there's a surcharge on that fine, which is now up to 84%, which was 40% when I started 15 years ago.
Okay, explain to me the concept of surcharge. What is even, where did that even start?
Ernie, it's like you've been saying all show, do the damn math. You take your fine 80, and you times it by 84%. And then 0.84, and then you get a new number. That number you add on top of the fine.
No, I understand, but when did the concept of this thing even come in?
It all started with some government bureaucrat somewhere who said, you know what? We need to get more money out of people. It's the same place that there's, and it's funny, when I go over pleas with people, in both the federal court and the state court, they have this same type of notion. So, like, when I'm going through your plea with you in the state court, I tell you, and by the way, the maximum fine is $150,000 plus an 84% surcharge. You know, that's a maximum of roughly $250,000 plus $10. And I think that's actually up to $20 now. There's just a $20 fee on there. And in addition to that, you need time to make your fine payments, another $20 on top of that.
Wow. Brock, let me ask you, man. You guys got this video camera, photo radar thing going on in Vegas?
Heck no. But we're a town of video cameras. Every place has a video camera. You're watched 24/7 in this town.
Yeah, but those are private video
company.
Cameras.
Yeah, but you're not getting fined for your lewd behavior.
Nope, not at all. In fact, we encourage lewd behavior here.
Yeah, what happens in Vegas? Hey, thanks for the call, Brock. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I got a quick Halloween story for you involving Mark. I've got a ritual where I clean my garage every Halloween, And 2 years ago, I had a whole bunch of Ron Paul stuff in there, and the kids were coming up to get candy, and parents saw these white paper bags with Ron Paul stuff in there. So I was handing those out to the parents. They were interested in it.
Oh, and I already know where this is going.
I know where this is going, too.
One of the goodies in that bag was an essay by attorney Mark J. Victor about how we should be legalizing methamphetamine.
Wait a second. They didn't like that?
Oh,
I don't understand.
I hid from my neighbors for a year. Fast forward to last year.
That's why they're all moved out.
Fast forward to last year, and I'm sweating bullets. I'm in my garage handing out candy, and the first parent that walks up to me says, "Hey, you're the one that was handing out that meth stuff last year." I said, "Yeah." And he said, "That was a great essay. I love that." I had like four or five families come up and say that last year.
Wow, good to know.
You know, that's a good story. Hey, thanks for the call, Brock.
Take it easy.
Go ahead, Mark. Talk about that essay, because that had a big impact. You know, we put that in the Ron Paul bags, and a lot of people were like, are you sure you want to do that? And we're like, heck yeah.
It could have been entitled Why We Should End the Drug War, but that's no fun, right? So I thought maybe we should put I should put legalized marijuana on there, but that's not really as much fun as legalized methamphetamine.
Yeah, go big or go home.
Yeah,
you know?
So I did legalized methamphetamine with an exclamation point after that. I think maybe in the first footnote to the paper I said, yeah, it's true. I mean, this really applies to all drugs. But, you know, it's funny. I've had more than one drug prosecutor who has absolutely positively refused to even so much as read my article just because of the title. And I've also had people who have come to me and said, "Hey, Mark, look, we'd really appreciate it if you just changed the title of the article." And I said in traditional Ernest Hancock fashion, no,
no.
So look, people can change the title if they want. But look, if you can't get yourself to read the article just because the title is legalized methamphetamine with an exclamation point.
Yeah, put that in a Google search. You just put legalized methamphetamine.
I'm the only one.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of them out there, you know. And it's been published on Lou Rockwell and on, and of course, we have it on Freeman's Phoenix and your sites and a bunch of them. It's all over the place. And it's just an argument from a criminal defense attorney that makes a lot of money on the drug war going. Look, man, if I had to pick, I'd just soon not have this drug war, because my freedoms and my life would be totally different in this country without this thing, because it's going to fall apart. It's going to implode.
Yeah, you know, just as a little side note, I've presented that exact same argument in front of judges, sitting judges, not just in the Superior Court, but of some on the Court of Appeals, as well as prosecutors. And I've said to them, look, tell me where I got it wrong. I want to, you know, I expect to be skewered when I'm done here at this podium. Tell me where I've got it wrong. And little to no resistance.
Because they know they're sitting there.
Right.
They know this thing is broke. It's done. All right, let's put it this way. How are they able to maintain a criminal justice system with this weight on it?
It's the same way we're able to maintain our government with this weight on it, Ernie, because people see problems in society, and instead of identifying the government as the source of the problem, which it is, people look to the government for the solution to the very problem the government has created. It's the same problem over and over and over again.
And we know it's going to implode. That's why we do the Freedom Summit. We're not here because Mark put it really good. I remember the argument. Look, one, there is no central plan for freedom. You know, you just come here and, you know, and just, you know, bring your communistic whatever, and, you know, and hopefully you'll like re-examine, because we have the great modern minds of freedom here to explain to you what is coming. Well, it's not coming anymore. It's here. And the question is, how do you survive it? That's all we got to do. We don't have to beat the bad guys. We just got to survive them. We'll see you next week.